This podcast is sponsored in part by Intesa Communications Group, a women-owned PR and government relations firm that helps you communicate and advocate with confidence. Intesa colleagues are deeply ingrained in the issues and communities you care about most. From universities and nonprofits to corporate developers, theme parks, and tech titans, Intesa helps thoughtful leaders from all sectors shape San Diego for the better. Learn more at IntesaCom.com. The San Diego Housing Federation's annual Ruby Awards is the county's largest affordable housing community recognition event. They'll honor the best people, projects, and achievements from the past year. Join the awards on June 6th at the Marriott Marquis San Diego Marina. Early bird pricing is available until April 12th. Secure your tickets today at housingsandiego.org. That's housingsandiego.org. This podcast is brought to you in part by the estate of Bob Nelson. Bob was a lover of all things San Diego and a longtime supporter of Voice of San Diego and its podcasts. We at Voice of San Diego are honored to have his support during his lifetime and continued support through his estate planning.
Welcome to the Voice of San Diego podcast in partnership with News Radio 600 KOGO. I am Scott Lewis, the CEO and editor-in-chief at Voice of San Diego. I'm joined, as always, by Andrew Keats, Andy Keats, managing editor at Voice of San Diego. What's up, Andy?
Not a lot, man. How are you?
I'm good.
Welcome back.
Thank you. Yes, it's good to be here with you and with fellow managing editor Andrea Lopez Villafana. What is up, Lopez?
Hey, Lewis.
I was sick last week. I was, a little preoccupied the week before you guys were gone. We haven't been together in a while.
I know.
It's been a minute.
Well, in the podcast room.
In the podcast room. We've been together, yeah, talking and dealing with the strategy of this robust, powerful little news organization. Coming up on the show this week, smart streetlights are back. Obviously, time is a flat circle and activists aren't happy. You'll be surprised to hear a billionaire is back in San Diego philanthropy circles, but not everyone is excited about that either. And the mayor has done a reorg for his homeless approach. We'll talk about all of those updates to stories we've been following. But our big conversation this week is about downtown. CBS News came to town and said that our downtown, San Diego's downtown, was an anomaly. As other city cores suffer, San Diego's is supposedly popping. Or is it? We have our own grades on downtown. It's a little bit more complicated. There's obviously some bright spots. We'll go through all that. That's all coming up. Stay with us. So you guys know the Get It Done app, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Did you know it's something of a social media feed itself? You can look at what people file in the Get It Done app.
Yeah.
And you can check up on your own submissions, mm-hmm. and you can see what's been closed. And
do you do this on your free time?
I do. I love it.
It's like Venmo.
Yeah. It's sort of, except for it's better. There are some like good ones. I actually briefly started a feed, and I would love to keep it going, called The Best of Get It Done, and on the Twitter. Because there's some really good ones. Like somebody will take a picture of dog poop, and here's one that says illegal dumping of dog poop, and then it's a picture of dog poop on the thing. And I thought that was. There's one here that says like
you got to be like old man Clemens to decide that you're gonna stop whatever you're doing.
Yeah.
Take a picture of that. Enter the City of San Diego's app. Put like it's.
Yeah.
You've really committed yourself to documenting what's going on.
Right. And also then like what is a crew supposed to come pick up the dog poop?
Yeah.
So then there's another one. This was my personal favorite. It says, quote, smells like marijuana near elementary school on a daily basis, end quote. All right. That'll do. Here's one. It points to a street.
It doesn't name the elementary school.
It does name the coordinates. So
okay.
It's one of those like by you can figure out the identification.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm not going to slander it here. Here was another classic. It's an arrow pointing at a street and it says Missing Creek. It's buried under the road, needed for peace and healing at the shelters downstream.
Oh boy.
Missing Creek.
Somebody's
How are they going to close that one? Like they're going to have to open the creek up?
The city's on it.
Yeah. Well, one of the most common, of course, get it done requests is the streetlights. There's a lot of streetlights that are out. You'll take a picture of them and put it on there. It got to the point where the mayor decided that it was a emergency, and he has now hired a firm to come in. I think it's called CTE Inc. to come in and support the city electricians and replace and repair streetlights across the city. It's gotten to the point where they couldn't keep up. It was a massive backlog, as he said. We need the private sector to come in. And I found this amusing for a couple of reasons.
Okay. I think I know where it's going because I have been reporting in this town long enough to know when something like this would have qualified not just as big news, but like an ideological battlefield.
Yeah. Yeah. So come back with me about 10 years, dear
Let's
listener.
Take a journey.
Yeah, about 10 years. So the city went through this spasm of enthusiasm for the concept of managed competition. Are you familiar with this?
No.
So there was a, what was his name? Mitch Daniels in Indiana.
Yeah.
Mayor and then senator, right?
Presidential candidate,
yeah,
rumored presidential candidate.
Yeah, had this like apparently very adored idea on the right to like, you know, pit government services that are offered with private contractors, that the government employees should compete to prove that they can deliver a service better and more efficiently and obviously cheaper for the taxpayers than the private sector could do it, right? And so we in San Diego passed a ballot measure, a charter amendment that allowed us to embark on what's called managed competition. So as this process would be managed where they would say like, well, you need to, you know, repair city vehicles. So you go through a process of the city would, you know, workers would turn in a bid and then the private contractors would turn in a bid and then they'd see who was the best bid and then they'd give it to them.
Yeah, I think street sweeping was one that was done.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Now it was supposed to save just buckets of money and just absolute truckloads of money was going to be saved. It was going to deliver a lot of things better. Mayor Kevin Faulkner, Mayor Jerry Sanders, they were all into it.
Carl DeMaio.
And they embarked and they had a lot of trouble getting this thing going. just a lot of trouble. Finally, a few of them started going. And they would come back and they'd say, look,
the city won.
The city employees delivered the best bid. And they got to keep those jobs, right? And so it was a real just whimper of a ending to this program. It went from like, we're going to save. This is like when people would say, like, how are you going to deliver on your promises? The mayoral candidates or whatever, they'd say, like, well, managed competition is going to save all this money and we're going to deliver. And so,
I think what they did, like four services or something, and all four were won by the city.
Yeah, it was such a dud. And it was just like, and what was sad about it is that we fought about it for years. We watched people just tear their hair out, yell at each other, and go to war. And it was nothing.
Yeah.
Like nothing happened.
Yeah.
And so now, fast forward. Part of what they also implemented during this period were, you know, lower benefits for city employees. They literally cut off new employees from getting defined pensions in the future.
And they froze their salaries.
And they froze salaries and they made it, I think, objectively less attractive place to work. And so it turns out now it's a less attractive place to work. And the city has more than 20% vacancy rate. I was meeting with a top city official the other day, and I was like, what
flex.
If...
Flex.
What's that?
Flex.
Nice flex there.
Yeah, well, it was...
Not just a city official.
A top city official.
Stop it. I can meet with... It's Andy Field. He directs Parks and Rec.
Were you at the University Club?
Stop it. No, it was at his office.
Because I go to Born and Raised. What car did you drive to the meeting?
I drove my truck to the empty parking lot at Inspiration Point.
But like a nice new suit.
Stop. Polish this was suits. Not something you need to make fun of me about.
Sick haircut.
Anyways, what did
I showed up for the? I showed up at the old Navy Hospital in Balboa Park where the parks leaders work.
Did you leave a huge tip?
Stop it.
Just a very impressive guy.
The world just make fun of me. Everybody, my kids, the girls I coach on softball, my wife, my family. I think my dog even makes fun of me. He's so stupid, and he just makes fun of me.
All right, tell me about this meeting.
And he's like, we have, I was like, why are our parks not doing great? And he's like, well, we have this massive vacancy. Like all these parks, you know, they need like three grounds maintenance workers, and they have one, all this to all across the parks. And I was like, what about this? Consider this. What if we take all of the empty positions and we made them half the positions that are empty and we doubled their salaries? Mm-hmm. Like, could you fill those then? And he's like, you're dumb.
Yeah, right.
That's not how this works.
Right.
But there is a massive vacancy, which, by the way, the cops are the ones that get the money, right? Like, if it's a vacancy, like, they get to do these overtime things, right?
Yeah.
So we have these vacancies, and now, because it's not an attractive place to work, and so now, this week, or 2 weeks ago, the city announces that it's going to hire private contractors to fix the streetlights because they can't keep up with a backlog of streetlights that aren't working because they don't have enough employees. So it's come full circle.
And this thing, what's amazing is, like, these are the least controversial contracts that the city could ink.
Yeah, the unions are like, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
We can't do the work.
We are drowning.
There's no one on the city council who's like ready to turn this into an ideological battle and be like, whoa, 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 privatizing city services. There's none of that. Right?
Now it helps that the contractor they hired is a union contractor.
Sure. Yes,
and so they're not necessarily, they're union workers that are going to get these jobs. And when I called the union, they're like, yeah, we're very excited to do this. We think the mayor's made a wise decision to hire us.
Sure. But now the city's development services department did the same thing.
Yes.
For essentially the same reason.
Right.
And those are, you know, it's the DSD workers are represented by a union, and the contractor that comes in to do this work now, best I can tell, is not a unionized workforce.
Yeah. So I asked the city, like, what about, like, the law you passed that said that it has to go through this process?
Yeah.
And they're like, that's only if you're trying to save money.
We are not trying to save money.
I thought that was great. Yeah. Okay. Got it. As long as you're just trying to spend more.
Oh, don't worry about
You don't have to
that.
Worry about the process. Genius.
We have no desire to save any money.
Okay, so speaking of process related to streetlights, we're back to a discussion, 5 years ago or so?
Yeah.
They put up a bunch of smart streetlights. If you look at a streetlight in San Diego.
7 years ago?
So you know these, right? These streetlights you look at, they got the little whiskers coming out.
Funny.
And it's like a spider.
It's like a spider on the streetlight.
Mm-hmm.
So they put all of those up, and they were supposed to, this is still one of the classics.
First time I ever had a conversation about these things, we were in Liberty Station.
Okay, so that's like 6-7 years ago. Yeah. You think it was like 7. Oh my gosh. Okay, so they put these up, and this is still one of my favorite San Diego, like, things. Mm-hmm. They put these up, and they're like, we're going to use this to monitor the environment and, you know, pollution and traffic.
Noise pollution.
And then they're like,
maybe parking spaces.
Yeah.
Maybe like to help find.
And turns out they never did that. They only ever used them to surveil for law enforcement reasons, right?
Yeah.
Ever. That was it. And they never did anything to announce or formally approve that as the use of them, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
And so
obviously people were mad or had thoughts.
Turns out they created a whole like coalition of people who were mad about it, right? San Diego Trust, I think it's called.
Yeah. Trust SD.
Yeah. And so they were like, why don't we actually have a policy in place if you're going to mass surveil the community about how that data is going to be used and when you should do that? And they ended up
when you want to, because I think they intuited correctly that this wouldn't be the last time some new technology came around that police officers figured that they had a utility.
Yeah. Now, to be clear, all of the boxes they put on the streetlights are now like useless, correct?
I think they're just turned off.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
Yeah. Well,
but Somebody spent a lot of money to do that.
Yeah.
And they're useless at the moment.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then, so now what's happened?
Well, so the city did essentially, you know, they had to be dragged towards it. But in the end, they did what the activists had requested, which was pass a thoughtful policy that sets a process for when a new technology comes about that needs to be approved and needs to go through this board. They created a board that would hear these sorts of things, that would have some expertise on these sorts of questions, and lay out some ground rules for when you were going to do these sorts of things. What, you know, we can't just have new surveillance technology barging in without anybody's awareness.
Right.
Right. So that system is in place now. And so now that system is in place, the city has said, all right, well, we'd like to get these cameras turned back on.
Yeah, we'd like to do some surveillance.
Yes.
Because the crime, people are worried about the crime. You talk to people, they're worried about the crime,
mm-hmm.
right, Lopez?
Mm-hmm.
And so...
And I mean, you know, look, if you're a homicide detective and you show up to a scene and you're doing the chalk outline to make sure that that's taken care of.
Yeah. That's how it goes. Yeah,
right. Chalk crime. First things first, get my trusty chalk out
yeah.
in my pocket.
My notebook.
And then you look up and there's like a camera on a street light and you know that that's turned off. You know, I have no doubt that you'd like to, you'd say, boy, it sure would be nice if this thing was turned on, right? Mm-hmm. But so they've asked for permission to turn these back on.
It would be nice to be able to see what everybody's doing in the city at all times so that we can see who did bad things.
Right, yeah. Like Batman.
Yeah.
And right now they're...
Like Batman.
This week they've had these community meetings throughout everywhere in San Diego where they will be turning back these streetlights and just letting people know what they're planning to do with them, and much different than what happened 7+ years ago.
And so as Jesse Marks, our reporter who's been covering smart streetlights forever, has outlined, these streetlights are like much better now.
Yeah.
It's been a couple of years.
It's been so long getting this policy passed that the technology is advanced.
Yeah.
And so they can do much more. For instance, like they have license plate readers now, which is like a separate, different, controversial technology that people also didn't like and thought that there needed to be a policy for. But they're going to like integrate that into it now, for instance. So here you go. I mean, I do think, though, now that we've gone through the years-long process of passing a policy that's supposed to outline these questions for us and guide the discussion, I suspect where we're going is that most of the people, maybe not everyone, but most of the people who have been most activated around this question.
About the process,
will soon reveal that they don't want these technologies to be implemented regardless of the process by which they are implemented.
Which is a theme we see often in local politics, is that people will defer to process arguments when they're really mostly mad about the core.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's not that they're not following the process that's the problem. It's the core.
Yeah. Now, I don't preclude the existence of some, maybe even a plurality of activists who say, like, I think it's inevitable that certain technologies are going to make their way into the public space.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as that's the case, let's do it right. Let's do it responsibly. I'm sure there are plenty of people who have like a clear-eyed sense of the inevitability of some of these things. I mean, there are cameras everywhere. There are cameras everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But yeah, I think there's certainly we're now at a much more difficult conversation, which is like, should there ever be surveillance in the public sphere
mm-hmm.
that we need to surrender some of our sort of civil rights over in the name of safety, which is like it's just a much thornier conversation than like, hey, if we're going to do these things,
you didn't appoint the proper chair and go through the proper process for this privacy committee that we need to establish.
Yeah. And like, honestly, even for us as journalists, like, it's a much easier thing to write that, like, hey, they have no process to outline this sort of thing.
Rather than raise maybe privacy concerns or
that are just like inherently subjective and on which like every person is going to land somewhere different on an infinite spectrum on.
So there's some more public hearings. You can check out Jesse Mark's story about it and put in your own input about this issue. It's definitely advancing. Now, is this for the whole city or just for certain areas?
I suspect it's the whole city, or at least the whole city that has these cameras implemented, perhaps in certain more suburban communities that have fewer streetlights. Maybe they don't have them at all.
All right, so we'll be following that, and stick around for updates. We did a story this week about T. Denny Sanford. He's one of the richest men who has a connection to San Diego. He's a billionaire. He's also got a connection and a life and career in South Dakota, which investigated him for allegations he was involved in or had some child pornography. They decided not to file charges. And we're unclear on any sort of national investigations that might be continuing. But because of the investigation that happened, a lot of local philanthropies or charities, nonprofits really pulled back. You know, Sanford's huge. There's Sanford Burnham Center. There's all kinds of Sanford institutions. National University was on the brink of renaming the entire university after this guy, and they paused that. And now with this change, now with the decision in South Dakota, a lot of like University of San Diego of California, San Diego is in and back with him. They're going to give him a lifetime legacy award. And but there's a lot of people still like not sure about wanting to embrace him in philanthropic circles. And that'll be just a really interesting debate to watch go forward because he hasn't been charged with anything. He hasn't. There's nothing to point to that says, like, you obviously shouldn't take money. On the other hand, something caused them to pause before. And there are people. Jesse Marks talked to a doctor who deals with child abuse victims. And she's like, I don't want to have anything to do with an institution that takes money from him. And so this is going to be thorny for local nonprofits for years to come, it feels like.
Yeah, I mean, it was easy when he was under investigation, and that was like
We'll just wait,
right? That's an easy decision to make. And if he had been charged, well, then certainly there's no decision to make at all. Where things are left now is probably like the stickiest of the outcomes for the communities that, or you know, for the community organizations that accept money from large donors, which is he still has lots of money he'd like to give away, and those people are in the business of getting money.
To
further their mission. And, you know, like what would be the firm reason you could point to say, no, we're not taking his money? It's not like out there and obvious for you, but certainly there's going to be people in those organizations that are going to point back to these stories, that are going to point and ask questions about it.
Or raise concerns and say, I'm not comfortable with this and don't think we should do this. Whereas before, they probably would have never said that.
Yeah, so that was another piece by Jesse Marks. You can check that out at Voice San Diego. And, you know, speaking, of course, of philanthropic causes, none are bigger right now than homelessness. And there's been a lot of concern about whether there's enough being done, whether the city is doing enough about it. And the mayor reacted last week by reorganizing the entire structure of how his organization deals with homelessness. What were the details there?
Well, they basically took this homelessness services department that answered directly to him, that was in the mayor's office, and moved it underneath one of the deputy COOs, one of the essentially city manager style form of government. And so it's, you know, they're just moving things around on the org chart. It just seems like ever since this position came to be, it's one reorganization away from working the way that everybody seems like they intended it to. And then when it doesn't, it's just another reorganization is coming.
Yeah. So homelessness is still bad. There was the first month, though, in a long series of months that the downtown partnerships count of homelessness downtown went down slightly, still far above what it was last year. But I don't think that's because anything improved. I think it's because it's been cold
and rainy.
It's been really bad.
For a number of months that you could imagine somebody saying enough.
Yeah.
Like I will take your available shelter.
Something. This is still remaining the main issue. Number one, number two crisis in San Diego. And we're going to continue to focus on it deeply.
This podcast is sponsored in part by Intesa Communications Group, a women-owned PR and government relations firm that helps you communicate and advocate with confidence. Intesa colleagues are deeply ingrained in the issues and communities you care about most. From universities and nonprofits to corporate developers, theme parks, and tech titans, Intesa helps thoughtful leaders from all sectors shape San Diego for the better. Learn more at IntesaCom.com.
All right, we're going to have a little conversation here about downtown.
Yeah.
So the CBS News, that was good earlier when Lopez is like, what's CBS?
There's just like acronyms up. It said CBS Downtown. I was like, what, you know, and then he had Cap under that.
Yeah, so no, I get it.
I was trying to understand what he was talking about.
Yeah.
And no, Andy being Andy.
It's one of
television
the
television station, like blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, Columbia.
I don't think I said it with that voice.
No, it was that. It was very accurate.
You know, like a Fox.
Yeah.
And like ABC.
Yeah. Well, CBS, the actual news network, came to San Diego with a big story about downtown. And here was the thrust of it.
San Diego's downtown rebound is something of an anomaly. Many major cities across the country are still struggling to entice people back to the urban core. But not here.
We know that thanks to cell phone data.
But not here. San Diego's popping. Now, we work downtown. We
are in downtown right
we're,
now.
We're in downtown. We're in the moment. Most popular public affairs podcast recorded in downtown San Diego.
I live in Golden Hill, just outside of downtown, and I commute through the brunt of downtown to get to our office.
And you live in Barrio Logan, and very similar, right on the outskirts of downtown. And, you know, I spend a fair amount of time down here, and I feel like this is a little more complicated than the national news organization made it sound. What were your, you want to talk about, let's start with you. What did you want to express here?
Well, look, so first of all, I'm pretty apprehensive about this because they used a valid data set. There was a study done by UC Berkeley that was based on a objective criteria, and San Diego was rated at the top of the list.
Yeah, so let me explain that real quick. So this woman, Dr. Chappelle, she said her team analyzed patterns using cell phone data in 62 downtowns. They checked pings, and they were able to collect about 18 million pings. And San Diego was at the top of the list of recovering from its pre-pandemic pings. So basically, there was a lot of people on their phones downtown, more than in other cities across the country. And out of that is the bustle. Now, CBS also used sales tax revenue to prove that we were above, you know,
where we
pre-pandemic levels.
Which, but that was a little questionable because of inflation.
Yeah, if inflation goes up, then you know, 15% in that period, then your tax should go up 15%.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of factors that go into that. But, okay, fine.
Yeah.
So the pings were, there's a lot of pings.
Yes. And so, and I remember, you know, there was a semi-viral tweet not too long ago that also used cell phone data that people started questioning whether it was a valid measure for San Diego because our downtown by the catchment area included the airport and maybe other downtowns don't have that, in which case, blah, blah, blah. I'm not trying to get into any of that. I'm not here to undermine the reporting or the analysis by UC Berkeley.
We'll accept the data.
I accept the data as it is. And, you know, because if you're gonna nitpick whether San Diego works, then you got to start doing that for all 62 other cities. And I don't know them well enough to do that. Let's just take them at their word.
Let's do a state of downtown from what we see.
What I'll say, though, is from my admittedly anecdotal perspective, which is not typically the responsible frame for journalism, but I'm just being honest, downtown San Diego absolutely does not feel robust and back to its pre-pandemic life at all.
Or an anomaly.
I haven't been to 63 downtowns in the last year, but I've been to 5 or 6 major downtowns in the last year. And San Diego doesn't stand out as abnormally lively and vibrant and back to normal among those five or six cities. San Diego downtown, to me, and again, I want to stress, this is not the sort of objective, measured, comprehensive measure that this analysis that the story was based on comes from. Just from my perspective, San Diego feels very much like it is not back to a pre-pandemic level of activity at all.
I have a take, but let's go to you, Lopez. What's your reaction to the idea that downtown is popping better or as well as it was popping?
It's popping.
Before the pandemic.
It's not as popping, I would say.
Really?
I mean, there's like pockets and areas where, yeah, there's like a lot of restaurants and they're very touristy areas that you would already expect a lot of people to be there. But I don't know, just walking around here and knowing the area, it's not the same as before the pandemic, like especially like restaurants at lunchtime. Like it's not the same. There's so many restaurants that close too.
Well, let's be clear. So there, after the pandemic, I remember coming down to just get some work done in the office when during the bleakest parts of the pandemic, and it was dark here.
It was grim.
It was grim. It was like a bomb had gone off, and like there was just like, you know, it looked like a post-apocalyptic sort of feeling. There were like tents for testing, and there was like emergency places, and it was just the convention center was itself an emergency shelter.
I used to run downtown during those times, and I used to psych myself out because it felt like, you know, the opening scene of 28 Days Later.
Yeah.
That's how downtown San Diego felt during those times.
It was
bleak. They talk about that in the story. They talk about some, you know, some business owners who are talking about just how bad things were.
Yeah, one restaurant that opened right before in March 2020. Rough. Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
And that's true. And there, you know, there's some other stuff that, you know, Todd Glory is quoted in the story talking about all the things they did during the pandemic. And there's nothing he talks about the city doing that, you know, he's citing as the things that helped the city that I dispute. You know, the city did very much so during that time make it easier for businesses to open patios and parking spaces. And that did help during those bleakest times. And they got the convention center open. And that did happen on the early end of the recovery. And so, you know, like I'm not quibbling with any of the policy response discussed in the story.
And I should point out, too, it really was significant how well they transformed the convention center into a homeless shelter and then into a shelter for, remember, asylum seekers, and then into a functioning convention center again, all while keeping those convention center employees working and going. Like that's a true feat they should all be proud of. Fantastic. But here's how I would put it. Downtown is very different from place to place, and I will do it in three tiers. One, the real gems of downtown. Let's see if you dispute what I would consider. So the first gem of downtown is where they took CBS News, Little Italy. It's wonderful. It's a nice walkable. They transformed Date Street into a plaza. It feels great. It's lively. It's awake. It handled the outdoor. What's that?
It's popping.
God.
Yeah. The patios in the street during that time. I mean, they, you know, that was one area, even at the bleakest, we're talking about how horrible things were during the pandemic. They had that open for pedestrianized areas during the pandemic. People could go down there. And there were times you could fool yourself into thinking that, like, life was semi-normal.
Yeah.
In Little Italy, even then, right? Yeah.
Okay, and so another gem.
No dispute there, I agree.
Another gem, the waterfront park.
Yeah.
Fair?
Of course, absolutely. Yeah.
All right. Another gem, what the Padres have done with Petco.
Yeah. And in terms of before and after the pandemic, the San Diego Padres were not the thing before the pandemic that they are now.
Yeah.
I mean, they, like, the what's been going on at that stadium since fans were allowed back into it has become very special.
Yeah. And the Petco Park is routinely ranked at the, you know, top one or two ballparks or three ballparks in the country. It wasn't 20 years ago
when it was first
on the scene. they have transformed it into a very attractive place. And it's, you know, around it after game, it's very robust and fun. And that spills into the gas lamp, which I would call a minor gym, a problematic gym, a blemished gym.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess I think of gas lamp as like, it's not for me. You know, like, I don't need to neg the gas lamp. It's for convention goers. It's for young people going out to clubs.
Yeah. It's still just like...
There's no one at the gas lamp who's trying to be appealing to me. And, yeah, and they succeed at not.
It's still
me.
Just got...
There's
like,
no fish fans.
It's still just got like some blemishes, even for that.
Yeah.
Let's just say, even if it was set aside for that.
Yeah.
Like once they close Fifth Avenue and figure a few things out, it's going to be great.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
All right. Next gym.
And that's a vibrant area.
Yeah.
No question.
Next gym, the Shell. Undisputed.
Yeah. It's beautiful.
Wonderful addition to San Diego. The Shell concert and performance venue on the harbor. Beautiful setting, beautiful acoustics, just as good as it gets, right? Have you been to a show there?
I have not been to a show there.
That's surprising.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you like music? Or?
You guys are very funny. I do. It's another place that I run, though, and they have rehearsals there that are open to the public. And I run around sometimes during rehearsals. It's beautiful.
I walk around there with my favorite dog,
yeah,
Luna.
You leave your other dogs at home and drive to there with one dog and walk her around?
You can't walk five dogs at once. I mean, I'm sure you can, but...
Do they talk?
My dogs?
Yeah.
I mean, what must they be thinking when you're...
Unbelievable.
Anyways.
Does Luna just strut around like I'm the cool one?
She does. She's got a strut.
All right, so that's...
Do you feel guilty when you walk away from a house full of dogs with a dog to go on a dog walk?
I mean, she doesn't have a conscience. No. It's okay.
I have two dogs, and the thought of like leaving one of them at home is heartbreaking.
I mean,
Okay.
But the Shell is beautiful, and I want to see a show there, even though I'm not a concert person.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's my list of gems. Did I miss a gem?
No, those are the areas.
Okay, so those areas, I would say like... You know, with the sort of honorable mention of the gas lamp, and it's like right on the edge there. It's a wobbler, you might call it, a bubble. But those are the gems. Now, between the gems, it's dark.
Yeah.
It is bleak.
Yeah.
And, it's not good.
And while somebody might say, well, yeah, but it's been that way since before the pandemic in between those areas, I think that those areas outside those hotspots are more bleak now than they were 3 years ago.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think it is more uncomfortable to walk across downtown than it was before the pandemic.
I agree with that.
Totally.
Yeah.
And I think to paper over that does a disservice to the work that needs to be done to make that less so.
Yeah. So we're talking about the areas like basically where our office is.
Sorry.
Which is like, you know, the area around City Hall, basically.
C Street. Street is bleak. There are. It's like, I remember I got a little turned around in Managua one time in Nicaragua, and I was scared.
Yeah.
It was uncomfortable. And that's how C Street feels.
Yeah, there's a lot of shuttered buildings or a lot of shuttered businesses. A lot of businesses that are really struggling, and you can tell very few people walking because they are going to or from their house, because they're going to or from lunch, because they're going to or from work, very little of that. And people who need help and people who need assistance and, you know, it like, and who are not doing well. And then you also have like areas where there's just like nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even like there's something concerning or scary or unsafe. It's just like vacant. It's just ghost town for large stretches of downtown.
And then you can't ignore the people who are trying to build stuff here too. Like there's like 12 or so education establishments along the East Village sort of backbone, right?
Mm-hmm.
From the New School of Architecture to the Urban Discovery to the E3 Civic High School, to all of the Garfield High School, all these places up to the Community College and San Diego High School along that East Village kind of corridor. And they're all very upset about the crime and the insecurity that their their students feel around the area. And so to like put out a story and champion a story that things are going great when there's like schools there that are afraid to talk about how bad it is because they're worried that students won't want to come back is like, it's just, it's a little, just doesn't feel right.
Yeah. I mean, the one other thing I'll say is that the there has always been a collect, a sort of gathering of homeless people around the old downtown library.
Yeah.
Which has been part of why there's been such a discussion for a long time about turning that into a shelter.
Right.
There was already a congregation there. That area has grown significantly. And the blocks around the downtown library is a semi-permanent encampment that had normally not been seen except for on the very edges of downtown. And that's right in the center of the city. I mean, just outside of the gas lamp, really.
And so, I would say the edges, like,
are
worse.
More solidified, larger.
Like, I drove by, you know, when it's at the edge of East Village, when it's become Slogan Heights.
Yes, right.
And I was pretty shocked. It had gotten way
Yeah, it is shocking.
Worse. Yeah.
I mean, if seeing it doesn't shock your conscience, it's, you know.
If we want an active, safe, comfortable, beautiful downtown, we should go for that.
Yeah.
And I want it. And I'm in.
Yeah.
It's not there yet. And we have more homeless downtown than we have ever had.
By a large margin.
And
I mean, you mentioned at the top of the show that the Downtown Partnership's numbers ticked down a little bit. I mean, we'll link to it in the show notes for this post, but we've been keeping an update of this tally for every month's numbers, still going back to the beginning of the data set. And the chart is significantly higher than the previous high. Twice the previous high.
And it started spiking in 2020.
Yeah.
And so let's maybe dial back the enthusiasm for downtown's recovery.
Yeah.
Until we get our arms around these just absolute acute crises that are.
And if it is the case that we are so good that we are an anomaly, then I have nothing but despair and sympathy for the 62 other downtowns.
Yeah, and that's whenever these sort of national things come out, and it's like the schools are here are better than any urban school district across the country. It's like, well, that's a commentary on them too.
Yeah,
and it's a little bit disturbing. So, well, so sorry, throw a little cold water on the CBS and the mayor's triumph about it, but you know. Let's get to work. We can do this. We're strong enough.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for listening to the Voice of San Diego podcast, the most popular public affairs podcast recorded in downtown San Diego. Subscribe to the Morning Reporter, the most popular newsletter at VOSD.org/morning. That's VOSD.org/morning. I'm Scott Lewis, the CEO and Editor-in-Chief at Voice of San Diego. Andrew Keats is Managing Editor. Andrea Lopez Villafana is also Managing Editor. Nate Johns, our producer. Adam Greenfield made this possible this week as well as our technician and producer. We'll talk to you next week.